We're going to be looking at this title. It's up on the screen, Proving the Sincerity of Your Love. The bulk of our study this morning will be in 2 Corinthians, but we'll obviously be bouncing around some other passages, so you'll get some exercise if you're using an actual Bible today. So a little cardio workout for your digits. So we're going to want to start with this concept, proving the sincerity of your love. What does God really want from us? Faithfulness,
obedience.
That's a big one, right? Obedience to do His will. That's exactly right. If we look at Abraham and the lesson that Abraham learned, or the lesson that Abraham taught us on Moriah or in the Moriah area, what lesson do we learn about what God wants from us in Genesis chapter 22? Let's turn over there. Briefly, and we look in Genesis chapter 22, let's set the stage for what's happening in Genesis 22, verses 1 through 14. Some of you who are already there, what's happening? What's your chapter title, your non-inspired chapter heading for the chapter 22? Abraham offers Isaac. The offering of Isaac is what we're looking here in Genesis chapter 22. Verses 1 through 14, and I will not plague you with the reading of all that, but what you guys know, probably have heard this story once or twice, a few sermons on it maybe. What's happening in this chapter? What's unfolding in chapter 22? What's the opening scene? Opening scene for chapter 22? Some testing. What does God ask of Abraham? Sacrifice your son. And it's that classic, you know, God calls him, Abraham! Exclamation point. And Abraham's "here I am" kind of response. And then God gives this command, right? "Here I am," he said, "take now your son, your only son," just to remind you which son you're talking about, "whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I tell you." Okay, sounds good. Nice weekend outing with the son, right? So, what is Abraham, what's his response to that? So Abraham rose early, because it's a long trek. Would that be our response? I mean, is that normal? It's not normal, God. This is not a normal request, right? And so Abraham rose early. Yes, sir. It's pretty angry. Yeah. Yeah, that's the exactly. So I mean, this is, and he even reminds him in the commandment, "Your only son, the son you love, yeah, that one. That's the one I want." And he goes. Now, they go out, and when you have a sacrifice, which I don't think you guys are making sacrifices on a regular basis, but if you had to think about what you would need for a sacrifice, what do you need if you're going to go someplace and have a sacrifice on some hill somewhere? You'll need a fire, so that's important, which is interesting. They had various modes of transferring a fire, but this is not about survival skills this morning. What else do they need? A sacrifice. That's probably a key ingredient, right? That's a key ingredient in a sacrifice, is the sacrifice. And so they have the wood, it's stacked on the animal, and they have servants that are going with them, and father and son are walking along. And what does son say to father at some point in this travel? Where's the sacrifice? Because son has obviously seen some of these sacrificial events, and he's wondering, where is this sacrifice that needs to be made? And what is Abraham's response? Is that a bad response? That's a good answer. There's some questions in life that we have sometimes. And the answer is, the best answer at the time is, the Lord will provide. But would that be a fair assessment? There are things we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know exactly. We trust God. The Lord will provide. So they go to the hill. God shows them which one. And I don't know how tall it was. Maybe at one point, Abraham's, "Why so tall?" But anyway. So they go to this hill. On top of the hill, they make the altar. and you know kind of what happens with this scene. Does Abraham balk at any point in this? We don't read that. Now, granted, what we're given are like the Cliff Notes version of this event. You know, we're not given, but we don't see any evidence in the text that Abraham balked at this. And what we don't see either is the son saying, "Dad, it's kind of weird. What are you doing, Dad? What are you doing?" So we're not playing around anymore, Dad. We don't see that either. Isaac's on the altar. He's raising the knife to sacrifice his son. And then what happens?
Angels say, "Stop it."
Yeah, the angels say, "Whoa, stop." He said, "Do not stretch out your hand against the lad and do nothing to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." And it was interesting, it's kind of funny. The word for in Spanish for knife and spoon are very close to one another. Cuchara, cuchillo, they're very, very close. You know how when preachers preach, they get all like excited. You don't know a preacher here that does that, right? Gets all excited. And so I was, you know, really animated. And I was talking about this, preaching about this. And in Spanish, I said, "And he raised the spoon to sacrifice." And everybody lost it. You kind of lose the element there whenever you do that. But anyway, so a spoon, not so much. But in this, he raises the knife. And what do we learn about, what do the angels say we've learned about you, Abraham, in this moment? You've not withheld your son. You've not withheld your most precious thing from me. You've not withheld anything from me. And what happened? Did the Lord provide? Yes, the Lord provided. And Hosea 6:6 kind of highlights this: "For I delight in loyalty rather than sacrifice, in the knowledge of God rather than in burnt offerings." And this is what God is wanting, and what we see of Abraham in this moment was his loyalty to God, and that he would be obedient to God. Yes, ma'am. Yes. You tie him down, right? I mean, you need a hog time to get him on that thing. Yeah. Yes. Which is interesting, right? That he believed in his father, that the Lord would provide. Do you think they'd had conversations about God before? One or two? This is probably not the first time that Isaac is hearing about God. And how many times has he gone to bed, you know, saying, "Hey, you were a promised child of God." You know, how many times he'd heard that story? Yes, sir.
We also have to keep in mind that son trusted his father.
True.
Abraham trusted his father. So we got to test one on that.
Exactly.
This whole chapter.
Exactly.
The son is a test. God was testing Abraham. And yet that son seemed to be was testing his dad, because he didn't question his dad.
No. No, the son trusted the father implicitly in this. We don't see Isaac fighting to get off the altar, and Abraham trusted God, his father, and so that's exactly right.
Right now, you see somebody coming at you with a big machete knife.
Mm-hmm.
They ain't got you tied down on a block.
Yes.
You standing around, but you mm-hmm. gonna try to beat God to give him some room.
Yes, sir. I believe the phrase would be "beat feet" if you saw somebody coming at you with a machete, right? And so in this case, again, we see trust on two levels here, with the son and the father with God. Yes, sir. That's pretty deep. One little phrase, right? But what does that say about Abraham? And the Hebrews tells us that he knew that he could raise him from the dead. He gave him his son in that moment. He knew God could bring him back. And so me and the boy will return. Right, and it's probably another reason why he left the servants like down the hill a ways, because if the servants saw him trying to sacrifice the son, I think the servants might try to intervene. But I don't know, and maybe he told Sarah about this. I don't know. We don't read that. but again, we see this trust, we see this faith, and we see what we learn from this lesson, from this event. Is that Abraham trusted God. He didn't withhold anything from him. And we are obviously taught a lesson that continues to teach us about faith. We're going to look over, if you want to turn over to 2 Corinthians, we'll be turning over there and looking at the liberality of the Macedonians and their great example in giving as we talk about stewardship these 10 weeks. To begin, I'll read from 1 Corinthians 16 and see the set the stage for what's happening. 1 Corinthians 16, verses 1 through 3. Now concerning the collection of this for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so do you also. On the first day of every week, each one of you is to put aside and save as any as he may prosper, so that no collection be made when I come. When I arrive, whomever you may approve, I will send them with letters to carry your gift to Jerusalem. So here is this commandment that Paul writes to the Corinthian church, amongst other things that they're dealing with, right? This is a church, a congregation that was having a little bit of some issues. And he writes in this closing chapter, he writes about the collection for the saints. And we know about the churches, he says here of Galatia, he's directed. So it's not just the Corinthian church, but he's directed other congregations to do the same. He says, please put this sum aside so that when I come, there'll be this sum to give, to take down to the churches in Jerusalem that are dealing with a very, very difficult time right now. So here is the command that is given. And then if we talk about this, the churches that we're dealing with, the Macedonian congregations that we're dealing with, were possibly Thessalonica, Berea, and Philippi. These are possibly the congregations when he talks about references the congregations in Macedonia. These are some ones that he's talking about. And we know a little bit about. We have two letters to the Thessalonican churches, our church congregation. We know about those noble Bereans, right, and their attitude. And we know about the church in Philippi because of the letter there. So we see a little bit about the heart of these congregations and the relationship that Paul has with these congregations in Macedonia. And so these possibly being the ones that he's referencing from that area. So if we go over to 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 through 4, we have this situation that unfolds here. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 through 4, he says, "Now, brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God, which has been given in the churches of Macedonia. Then in a great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord, begging us with much urging for the favor of participation in the support of the saints." So here's the scenario that he's showing this Corinthian church. Now, he had given them instruction before, and he's writing this other letter, sort of like making sure that they're doing this collection that they're supposed to be doing, because they had done some other things incorrectly in the past. They didn't have a good track record on some other things. But he's saying here, you need to make sure that you're doing this. And he holds up these congregations as an example. And what do we learn about, in these four verses, what do we learn about their giving? What do we learn about their situation from which they're giving? Great poverty, right? Great poverty. Great ordeal of affliction. What else do we learn about him?
They were joyful.
Joyful, right? Desirous to give. So but these don't seem to go together, right? So here is great affliction, deep poverty, but a joy to give, desirous to give, and they were begging to give. Do those always go together? Hand in hand? Not always, right? And a lot of times, what does that show about a group of people or an individual who, while even in their poverty, in great poverty, as this is mentioning, they still want to give and are begging to give, desiring to give? What does that say about that individual or that congregation, that group of people? they're dedicated, their heart's in it, right? They're spiritually mature individuals. They trust God. Wow. They trust God to take care of them. We saw that with Abraham, right? We saw that trust. And when we look at these events, that they, great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy. Again, this goes back to like James 1, consider all joy, right? When you fall into various problems, essentially. And they're exampling that in this moment. For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave their own begging with us, much urging for, finish that verse 4, for the favor of participation in the support of the saints. So here is the where they were financially, where they were physically with this situation that was going on in Macedonia, and they wanted to give because they wanted in on that. They saw this as an opportunity to help the saints, and they said, we want in on that. We're begging to be in on what? To be the favor to participate in this giving. And so this, Paul brings this, or writes this to this congregation to encourage them to think about how these people are giving. Now, the congregation in Corinth wasn't in that situation. They weren't in that situation. And they were not in the same dire straits as apparently these congregations were. And so we see this heart of these individuals portrayed for us here. And what was the results of that giving? In verses 5 and 6, he says, in this, not as we had expected, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and to us by the will of God. So we urged Titus that as he had previously made a beginning, so he would also complete in you this gracious work as well. What was the result of their giving? What did they do first? They gave themselves. What does that look like? If we're trying to if we're trying to find biblical examples of somebody who first gave themselves before they gave, could we not look to Abraham again?
You can't miss Abraham.
Yeah. No, and when we see that, you know, Abraham and his when he was called out of Ur and the various things that God had him to do, we see Abraham giving himself to God. And in this situation, we see these congregations, Paul says, they gave themselves first to God. They dedicated themselves first to God. What does that look like in an individual today? If we were to, let's bring this up to date. What does it look like when an individual gives themselves first to God?
Showing, giving of ourselves.
Exactly. Did you all hear that? So giving ourselves first, is part of that is our service, and that we're dedicated to the service of the local work in various ways that we can be plugged in. And then, you know, a great example is we have our weekly contributions that we give, but there is a contribution that we save up for throughout the year to give to the work in the saints, not only here, but around the world that we're trying to help spread the gospel to. So there's a correlation there. So giving yourself first, there is this sense of dedication that one has. Any other comments about that? Yes, sir. I trust in you guys that are taking care of them. But that's in any situation where we devote ourselves, we can fully devote ourselves to God. We've given ourselves first to God. And when we can do that, there's a lot of changes that take place in your life. When you've devoted yourself to God, there's a lot of changes that take place. And there's various people who are in the process of doing that, right? People who are, when you come into the world or come into the church out of the world and you're learning what it is to walk with Christ and you're learning what it means to have that relationship with Him, part of that is learning to give yourself to God. And some days we do pretty good. And we're trying to. So out of that transformation, comes various things that you can see that change. There are outward aspects of that inward change. And part of that is our service and our devotion. And here he says they gave themselves first to God and then were giving of their means to help the saints. So God already had their hearts. And technically God already had their money, right? Cattle of a thousand hills. God already had their money, but he needs us to show, I'm trusting in you and I'm giving back. I don't know, have you ever teach kids how to share? That can be a challenge, right? That can be a challenge. And you give a child, and part of, I don't know, you every once in a while, you give them the shiny toy that they like, right? And they like, every child has their toy that just they latch onto. And then as a parent, sometimes you ask, can I see said toy? And you see that dilemma in the child's looking at the toy and looking at you and looking at the toy. And they learn, yes, you can see that as long as I get it back, right? You know, it's on loan. So, but there is that same sort of concept that once we've given ourselves to God, it's already his, but he wants us. Isaac was already God's, right? But God wanted to see Abraham give his son. So as we look at this congregation here and their devotion, they gave themselves first, and everything follows after that. Well, if you've given yourself into something, everything follows after that, right? There's nothing that you withhold from God. And so they urge them. And so they, Titus is involved in this process as well. So we look in the second section of Scripture here. And so we have this encouragement that Paul is trying to give to them. Beginning in verse 7. He says, but just as you abound in everything, in faith and utterance and knowledge and in all earnestness and in the love we inspired in you, see that you abound in this gracious work also. Paul does, when he writes letters, I don't know if you noticed, what he has this sort of like Pauline sandwich whenever he writes his letters. He kind of comes into, most of the times, he'll come into a letter and have something nice to say, and then he'll get heavy with the message, and then he'll end with something nice to say, that Pauline sandwich, which actually works very well if you ever have to have a conversation with somebody. It works very well. You just get them all ready for whatever you're about to say. And in this situation, what is he saying here? You do great on all these other things, right? Now, if we've read 1 Corinthians, right? We've read 1 Corinthians. They do well. They've faltered, right? They have messed up. But what does he say? Just as you abound in everything, in faith and utterance and knowledge and earnestness and in the love which we inspired in you, the right kind of love. What does he say? Verse 7. Abound in this, excel in this also. Do this too. Don't leave these others, don't leave this undone. You do well in all these things. And in verse 8, As he says here, I am not speaking this as a command, but as proving through the earnestness of others the sincerity of your love also. Yes. Loving enough to give. You love me, prove it. Right? Yes. So it's one thing to say something, right? It's one thing to say you love somebody, but proving it is something entirely different, right? You know, there's always that awkward moment in a relationship when you drop, who's going to be the first one to drop the I love you, right? And we understand there's that awkwardness, who's going to say it first, and when it's appropriate time, and oh, by the way, I love you, goodbye. Or there's that awkward moment when, like, you're talking with a friend on the phone, and you just get in the habit of saying it, and you just told your friend, like you just signed off with your friend on the phone, like you were talking to your wife. Okay, love you, hon, bye. Click, and that was a friend, you know, somebody else, a boss or something, that you just flippantly said that as you would normally say that. But it's one thing to say I love you, but it's another thing entirely to prove it. And how does Paul say here? Here's a way to prove the sincerity of your love by doing what? By giving, by abounding in this work also. There is a specific need. If you would abound in this, you are proving the earnestness of your love as well. Examples help, right? Verse 9, "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you through his poverty might become rich." Examples help. And Christ was obviously the perfect example in everything. But here is another way that Christ is an example. He gave up everything, right? He gave up everything. And we see this Philippians chapter 2, verse 7. If you turn over there. Philippians chapter 2, verse 7. "But he emptied himself, taking on the form of a bondservant and being made in the likeness of men." Now just, I don't know that we can understand completely what that was for Christ, because we can't completely comprehend where Christ was. We know he was with the Father. We know what heaven is like. We can imagine. We have our own concepts of where Christ was, but we don't know how far separated that was for that big of a change. We don't 100% understand that statement. We know it was drastic. We know it was huge. We know he gave up more than we could ever give up to make that change. But we as finite beings cannot completely comprehend how big a change that was for Christ. We can see the effects on him as he strove at every opportunity to talk with his Father and continue that relationship with his Father, even though he was in the form of a man. Also look at Luke chapter 9. Luke chapter 9. Yeah, exactly, and that is part of this, as you were saying, that there was this test with Abraham, his trust in God, and what some have commented also that, you know, here is God asking man to give his only son. Was it a test of man? Will they respect what I'm about to do? And so in this scenario, we see Christ, as you were saying, he made that change, and he's not asking us to do anything he hasn't done already. And we look in this passage in Luke chapter 9, verse 58, and Jesus said to him, "The foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." You know, it's a fancy way of saying, I don't have much. I don't have a lot by way of possessions. And so, you know, he's not asking us to do anything he hasn't done as well. Yes, ma'am. Exactly. That's a very good, point. Talking about that just going after the world, but giving that up and getting something much more in return. And God's done the bulk of that work, right? I mean, what have we done in order to earn that relationship with God? We've not really done much. And when you put, like you're saying, you put it in a comparison with what God has done, it's very little. It's a drop in the bucket compared to what God's done to come this far, to have that relationship with us. And he's even exampled that as to what it looks like to give. Yes, sir.
You know, in a classroom setting, it's easier to say that you can do this. Mm-hmm. But in the reality, it's a long journey.
Exactly. That is a very good point. That's, you know, anytime we're in here on Sundays, it's easy to sing about these things. It's easy to talk about these things. And then you walk out those doors, and, all right, got to put it in gear. And when you're putting that in the plate, but you're also looking at your bank account and your where does that trust come into play? Yes, ma'am.
Outside of the church.
Exactly. That's a very good point. When we make those sacrifices to give, we're showing our love to God, but we're also showing our love to one another and those things that are given and the way those funds are being used. That's a very good point. And a lot of times we're giving in any way we can, and you know, there's some places around the world that they don't have a monetary coin. They don't have necessarily, that's not a way they can give, but they give chickens. Robert Martin has been paid or has been supported by just, you know, make sure that I'm fed while I'm here. And that's as much as they can do. When I was in Nigeria, the very same thing, we would visit different places and they'd want us to give. They would want us to receive as we visited them, and we knew that this morcel of food that they had given to us, they had to work so hard to make that possible. And you better eat it. You deal with the consequences later, but you better eat it because they love you when they give that to you. And the same thing when we can show that to others. Yes, sir. Exactly. And that's a valid point as well, in that we have to so much to learn about giving. And this congregation in Macedonia is saying they wanted to be a part of that. They wanted to be a part of what was happening. And again, as we assimilate this into what it looks like in our own lives, we're talking about an attitude and a heart here. We're not talking about dollar signs, are we? We're talking about an attitude and a heart that we have when we give. And so that's very important to keep that in perspective. As we look at this verse 12, read on down to verse 12. He says, "For if the readiness is present, it is acceptable according to what a person has, not according to what he does not have." And so this willingness or this readiness to give, it's not about what you have or don't have. It's about this willingness, the willing mind to give in that moment. Also, this desire for, he says in the beginning of verse 13, "For this is not for the ease of others and of your affliction, and for your affliction, but by way of equality. At this present time, your abundance being a supply for their need, so that their abundance also may become a supply for your need, that there may be equality. As it is written, he who has gathered much did not have much, too much, and he who gathered little had no lack." So here is, what is he saying about this situation? We know we're giving to the saints in Jerusalem. This is the collection that's being made for them. What is he saying about this giving? Yes, exactly. And this could be reciprocal is what he's saying, right? He said, "At this present time, your abundance being a supply for their need, so that their abundance may also become a supply for your need." This may be coming back to you. We may give out of our abundance in a time that later on God is going to give out of the abundance of others to help us. So we trust. What's interesting about this is we trust God to take care of us, right? We do that. But when he takes care of us, what does it look like? In this situation, God is taking care of the saints in Jerusalem, isn't he? He's taking care of the saints in Jerusalem. How is he doing that? By others. He says, I have these people out of their abundance or even their great poverty are supplying the need for the saints there. In the same way, those saints may give in their abundance later on to other places in other ways. So when God takes care of us, there's ways he's doing it, using us, right? How many of you, when he sees a brother in need, says, "Well, I'll pray for you, go and be warm and filled"? That's what James says, right? You're missing on an opportunity to be a part of God's work when you see a brother in need, right? And we don't do anything. And so in this situation, here is that same scenario setting up. They want to be a part of the opportunity to help others. And when we talk about those congregations in Macedonia, they have seen others help them. Who sent Paul? Antioch sent Paul up to Macedonia. And they received that message, and they received the gospel. They knew what it was to have a relationship with God. How big is that? How huge is that? To have a relationship with God and see what it was to change your life and know what was done for you, that others would send people to you. Every time I get off the phone with the congregation on Easter Island, they say, "Thank the congregation there for sending you." Because they realize the value in you guys making the gospel available to them. In the same way, I would think that the Church of Philippi and those congregations in Macedonia are realizing that so much was done on their behalf that they want to be a part on helping others as well. And so we see that reciprocal nature that takes place. And Paul highlights that. You guys don't know that this might be a situation that's coming back on you later on. Let's look back at verses 10 and 11 again. We kind of skipped over those on purpose. But looking back at verses 10 and 11, he said, "I give my opinion in this matter, for this is to your advantage, who were the first to begin a year ago, not only to do this, but also to desire to do it. But now finish doing it also, so that just as there was the readiness to desire it, there may also be the completion of your ability, which is exactly what you were saying earlier, as far as it's one thing to, you know, on Sunday get pumped up about something, but it's another thing to, like, on a daily basis actually do whatever it is. And he's saying you desired to do it, you got excited about doing this a year ago, you were among the first who were getting ready for this collection. Don't fall down in doing this, in completing this. Make sure that you see this through. And it's easy for us to get excited about something. Have any of you ever been excited about something and then it kind of just peters out and doesn't? I mean, we're February. How many of you are still in on some resolutions that were made? You know, so that there are things that peter out. But he's saying here in this situation, don't let this, don't let your desire, don't let you were one among the first, don't let that just kind of falter out. Make sure you're seeing this through. We have to skip through this. I think, where are we on time? Like 2 seconds. Okay. There are those who are examples. It talks about law of sowing and reaping in chapter 9 and an attitude. Let's look over in chapter 9, verse 7. Each one must do just as he purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And I guess we'll finish here. When we give, is it about a monetary amount? Ask the widow. Is it about a monetary amount? No, it's about here. It's about our trust in God. It's about relationship. So giving is so much more than just this monetary thing, writing a check. It's about relationship with God. It's about trust in God. And it's about doing what he's asked us to do. So it is about attitude. It's about relationship. It is not about just a monetary amount. It's relationship with God. It's relationship with one another. And it's this attitude and heart of trust that would give. Any comments, questions before we close? All right. Thank you for your time this morning.